being afraid of the dark doesn't just happen to you. It happens sometimes to little bears, too. Welcome to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. Welcome to a special Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast, because I flipped the order of a couple of books from what I was originally going to do, because I wanted to take advantage of the fact that it is Saturday, October 31st, which means it is Halloween. That's right, it is a Halloween episode, and even though this book was going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks because of the year it was published, I was originally going to put it after the next couple of books, but I'm moving it up in the queue, because what better book to discuss on October 31st, Halloween, than The Berenstain Bears in the Dark? And I wanted to preface this discussion with a quote from one of my personal favorite authors, Mr. Howard Phillips Lovecraft, who is known as the sort of the godfather of modern American horror. And he said, this is from his essay, Supernatural Horror in Literature, and it's going to kind of form the backbone of what we're discussing today in accordance with the book we are reading. And it goes like this. He says, because we remember pain and the menace of death more vividly than pleasure, and because our feelings toward the beneficent aspects of the unknown have from the first been captured and formalized by conventional religious rituals, it has fallen to the lot of the darker and more maleficent side of cosmic mystery to figure chiefly in our popular supernatural folklore. This tendency, too, is naturally enhanced by the fact that uncertainty and danger are always closely allied, thus making any kind of an unknown world, a world of peril and evil possibilities. When, to this sense of fear and evil, the inevitable fascination of wonder and curiosity is superadded, there is born a composite body of keen emotion and imaginative provocation whose vitality must, of necessity, endure as long as the human race itself, children, will always be afraid of the dark, and men with minds sensitive to hereditary impulse will always tremble at the thought of the hidden and fathomless worlds of strange life, which may pulsate in the gulfs beyond the stars, or press hideously upon our own globe in unholy dimensions which only the dead and the moonstruck can glimpse. That's the thrust of the book, The Berenstain Bears in the Dark, which posits itself as a book about, hey kids, don't be afraid of the dark, but is, in actuality, a book about the fundamental layers of fear which cower us as children into our adulthood, which we pretend we are no longer affected by, but which in reality we carry, we harbor, we have as a burden on our backs as adults, but which we must suppress, particularly when children enter the picture. The Berenstain Bears in the Dark is a far more rich and textured book than I think it even realizes it is. It is a book about fear, about the nature of fear, about things that lurk in the dark, about the dangers of imagination, the necessity of that same imagination, and the way we can use the imagination that fuels the horrors that lurk in the dark as a weapon against those very horrors. It is a psychological story. It is a mystical story. It is a terrifying story, and it is the book we are discussing today, 1982, The Berenstain Bears in the Dark by Stan and Jan Berenstain. A fantastic little read, a great Halloween story. It doesn't have anything supernatural. It is about how we should not be afraid, and it is in itself a scary little book. Let us begin The Berenstain Bears in the Dark. It's got a wonderful opening page. The title page is the family of bears. Sister Bear is on Papa Bear's back. He's holding up a lantern, bringing light to the darkness, and they are looking at a scary, somewhat puzzling image in front of them. It's the title of the book, but it's a nice little encapsulation. Sister's the most afraid. Brother is apprehensive. Papa is eagerly pursuing the darkness, and Mama is giving the reader a look, saying, You know what's going on. And it starts in that location, that very location that we, most of us, many of us, begin our exploration of horror, of terror, of our love, of that very thing, which is the stories that bring chills down our spine. I want to say it's kind of the mecca for many a small child up through junior high and high school. It's probably different today. I don't know and I don't care. But it is still a wonderful place to begin exploring different emotions, different feelings. And that, of course, is the public library. Let me take a brief detour right now to say there is nothing better than being a kid going through the library and discovering new authors, new stories, new worlds, just by looking at the pictures on the books, just by flipping through the books on the bookshelves. I'm a huge proponent of the public library. If you don't have a library card, if you've let it lapse, pick one up. Just go to your library, get a new library card, renew it, find your old one, pay the $1 fine to replace your missing one. I don't care. Get a library card and go find a book. Go find a book you wouldn't normally pay money for and hold it in your hands. Take it home. Read it. A spooky book maybe. Get a mystery. Get a sci-fi book. Just pick up a book from the library. You know what? They need more people going in and getting books. I'm going to say that right now. Not only is The Berenstain Bears in the Dark a great book about fear, it's a great book about libraries. It starts off in the library. Brother and sister are there. They're in the Cubs corner and they're picking out their books. The sister's already got herself a book, but Brother Bear's really trying to find a good mystery. Now, originally, when I read this as a kid, I was kind of bored. I didn't like mysteries as a kid. But what this book does is it shows you that there's a good crossover between your typical mystery novel and a scary story. Let's talk about genre for one second. We tend to think in the terms of mystery suspense, those are on those shelves. Horror's over on these shelves. Sci-fi's over on those shelves. Romance is over on these shelves. And then fiction, general fiction's over there. Maybe you have westerns in the corner. But I want to go on record right now and say that a lot of times those genres are bupkis. They don't matter. They are vague and meaningless, and you can find plenty of wonderful horror in the science fiction section. You can find many wonderful science fiction novels that don't want to be science fiction novels in the fiction section. There's romance in there. Just because a book is labeled romance does not mean it is not worth your time. There are many wonderful romance writers. Just get online, look up the best romance writers. You're going to find things that challenge you, that challenge your perception of what it means to be romantic, that what it means to be a Western. Go find good Western novels. There are some suspenseful Western novels out there, some scary, terrifying Western novels out there. Get online, look up best Western novels. I'm not going to do your homework for you. What I'm saying is don't let genre confine you, okay? Don't let genre dictate what you read. You want to read a good science fiction novel? Go ask someone, what's a good science fiction novel that's not going to be in the science fiction section? And they're going to point you in a good direction, okay? Talk to your local librarians. Don't let genre confine you. And so when I was a kid and I saw that Brother Bear was interested in mysteries, I thought to myself, I don't like mysteries. I don't want to sit down and read an Agatha Christie novel. But what Brother Bear is really interested in is suspenseful mysteries with an element of horror, of terror. He's sort of stuck on these books about of Cub Scouts that go out and solve mysteries. And this one's called The Case of the Crying Cave. And he's picked it up. It's got a scary picture on the cover of a Cub Scout that doesn't want to go into a cave. I should say Bear Scout, even though they are Cubs. It's a Cub Scout, not a Cub Scout, not an official member of the Cub Scouts. Just he's a Cub Scout. So Brother Bear has picked it out because it looks spooky. And he shows it to Sister and she's like, yeah, that looks like a little bit too much. But the family is sitting around and they're reading that evening. And okay, another digression. Let's go on. Let's talk a little bit about family sitting around reading. We don't see it enough. I personally don't experience it enough. It's something that I had as a kid, but not a whole lot. And the picture the Berenstains have chosen to present to us is a little stereotypical. Brother's reading his book, sister's reading a storybook, Papa's reading the paper, and Mama is reading a gardening magazine. But there is something about a family sitting together reading books, or just you and your partner, or you and your kid, reading books in the same room together. And it's especially is important for parents. If you have kids, let them see you reading. I can't emphasize this enough. Let them see you enjoying a book by yourself. It supports so many things. It shows children that literature is a valid form of entertainment. It shows children that you, as a parent, have your own life, your own likes, your own interests. That it is important to take time out of the busyness of your day to do something enjoyable. And it shows that reading is a fundamental part of life, because it is. It really is. Exploring the world through the printed word is something that I cannot stop encouraging people to do. Even if it's books on CD, if that's the only way you have time, the 30-minute drive from your house to the office, get a book on CD, listen to it, or audio MP3s. I don't care what format it is. I say CD. Who cares? Don't laugh at me. I'm an old man. Get out there and feed your mind. It's a good way to also find literature that you wouldn't normally read. I have read and listened to many books that I would have been kind of had some trepidation about picking up and just sitting down and reading. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to work anyway. Let me just pop in this this book and see if it's interesting. And I've learned a lot. And I've expanded my mind. So the notion of sitting down with your family and just it's reading time. That's TV's off. Stereo's off. Get off your phone. Pick up your book. Okay, if you want to read on your tablet or whatever, fine. But we're reading. And we're enjoying the books that we have. And I think that that is – it's a beautiful illustration of the importance of a family bonding while not interacting. It's just – it's a nice thing to do. So they're all sitting down. They're reading. And Sister's finding her book, which is about three kittens arguing about which one is the prettiest, which sounds horrible. Another digression. I take my youngest to the library. I try to do it every week or so, every couple of weeks. And – before we pick out books that we're going to bring home, we always sit and read books, and she'll just bring me random books from the stacks, which is great because you can find many wonderful books just by picking them out at random. But you can also find some horrifically boring books, and we have read some terrible books that are along the lines of three kittens arguing about which was the prettiest. Just wanted to let you know, I appreciate that detail. She finds them boring too. So brother's reading his book, and sister's like, you know, tell me what this book's about. So brother's like, all right, I'll read you some of this book. Here's one of my favorite parts of this story, because in the narration, it tells you what the book's about. It's about some scouts who find a cave, and they hear a spooky noise coming from the cave. It's like a coming out of the cave, and they all run off. And the narration tells you what brother is reading about, but the illustrations actually show you the pages of the book. I like this because when I read the book out loud, I have a choice. I can either read the narration as the Berenstains have written it, or I can read the narration of the actual book. I always choose the narration of the actual book. It lends a feeling of verisimilitude to the story. Like, this is a book within a book. A story within a story. It takes you one step beyond the tale, and that in itself is a little Lovecraftian. He had some nested stories, quite a few of them actually, and you know, that's pretty much as far as it goes in this book, but it is a nice introduction to a child of the fact that some books have books within them, and it is, and you're going to have a character sit down and say, "Let me relate this story." I'm going to get you one degree removed from the narrative. It's nice. Well, so brother's reading this story, and it's a little bit spooky, and sister's looking a little wigged out until finally she says, "Stop, please stop reading me." And brother teases her about the fact that she is scared of this book, and Papa Bear intervenes. He's like, "Cut it out! Don't scare your sister anymore." So the kids go to bed, and the lights go out. It's dark in the house. There's sounds coming in from outside. And these are usually sounds that sister finds comforting. The sounds of frogs, owls, toads, the blinking of lightning bugs outside the window. But it has taken on, a new quality, a more menacing quality. And it says that night the dark didn't seem the least bit quiet and sleepy. In fact, it seemed, well, like the spooky darkness of a scary cave. And then she starts looking around the room, and her chest of drawers kind of looks intimidating. And the funny little clothes tree that Papa had carved, it doesn't seem so funny. They seem more like things you'd find in a creepy old cave. And then all of a sudden, brother does something horrible. He makes the cave noise because he realizes sister's having a hard time sleeping. He woos at her, and she flips out. She starts yelling, "Mama, Papa, ah!" They come running. Of course, it's dark. Papa trips over the clothes tree. He hurts his toe. Sister falls out of bed. They all land in a pile. Brother Bear thinks it's hilarious. They don't think it's hilarious. They get her back to bed, but she cries if the lights are out, turns on the light, and then brother can't sleep, so he turns them off again. Sister cries again. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible night. They wake up the next morning. They're all exhausted, so Papa gets this idea, and I love that it's Papa's idea. And here we see a nice development of the characters, because Mama Bear tends to be the one who comes out with the practical advice, but Papa's the one who comes out with the practical actions. Mama can philosophize and talk about, you know, parent psychology and the do's and the don'ts and the goods and the bads and the virtues and the promises and that we don't do that in this houses. But Papa's the one who's going to take you by the hand and give you some hands-on training. And I like that. I like the balance between the two parents. I like that Mama is the one who can sit you down and explain things, But sometimes you need Papa who's going to take you out and make you do things and show you things and demonstrate things. He's very practical. It's why he's a good guide in the older science books. Yeah, he's going to take you out, drag you out into nature, even if it's the middle of a storm, and show you. That's kind of the way, I guess that's kind of the way they probably learned in school. Mama was probably more of a book person, and Papa was probably more practical and hands-on. He probably had a little harder time with the tests, but when it came to the labs, he probably aced them. He was probably really good at that because he understands stuff when it was right in front of him. So he drags Sister up the stairs to the dark attic, which she does not like. He has a candle with him in a little like a little, like, whatever you call it, the glass over the candle, holding it by the thing. I don't know what you call that. A candle. It's a candle. He has a candle, and he starts digging through boxes. Now they're up in this attic, and it's a crazy old attic. It's somewhat creepy. And Sister, he explains to Sister that it's her imagination that is causing her to see things in the dark that aren't there. And Sister says, "I wish I didn't have an imagination." And Papa says, "Don't say that. A lively imagination is vital. It's what allows you to think up wonderful things." And Papa would know, because Papa is a creator. He creates chairs and tables. It's his job. He's a worker, but it's a creative job. He adds flourishes to his work. He is a craftsman, but he's also an artist. And do not ever believe that those two things don't go hand in hand, or that they are two sides of a coin. They work together. You can be very good at a craft, and you can add art to it. Or you can be very good as an artist and have a sense of craft. Like, they aren't mutually, that's the word, they're not mutually exclusive. Sometimes people tend to say, well, he's not an artist, he's more of a craftsman. And to which I say, you know, like, there's many great works of art that were great works of craft because they were, you know, they were commissioned pieces. But a great artist can take something that is a craft and make it their own. And I think that is what Papa does. We tend to think of him as kind of bumbling, lunk-headed Papa, but he's an artist. He's an artist and a craftsperson, and he understands the value of imagination. He puts it on the cubs, but I think he's just trying to relate it to for Sister to understand. It's a very important thing for cubs to have. You have to have imagination. It makes you a more interesting person. And they get up to the attic, and she sees a spooky shape. And then she realizes that it's her imagination, you know, making Papa's tools cast a shadow on the wall. Or she sees a giant creature, and it's just a pile of old stuff, a clock and a rug and some old chairs all stacked up. And what Papa does is he pulls out a nightlight. That was his nightlight. And Sister Bear says, "Oh, you were afraid of the dark at one point?" And Papa's like, "Oh, yeah, you know, we're all afraid of the dark at some point. That's natural. Everyone's afraid of the dark at times in their life. But here's my nightlight. I used this when I was a cub." So she takes the nightlight, and then it cuts to later in the day. And she asks Brother Bear, "Will you read me the rest of that, you know, the case of the Crying Cave?" And he's like, "Oh, really? You want me to finish it?" She's like, "Sure." You read to the end of the story. You find out the sound of the Crying Cave, the woo sound, was actually the wind blowing across the top of the cave, making this sort of sound. The way you the Cub Scout, the Bear Scout demonstrates by blowing across the top of a bottle. Like, see, it's just a whistling noise. Like, anything like that can, anything can make a noise if wind blows across a small opening. And later that night, Brother and Sister are in bed, and Sister's actually disappointed in the ending of the book. She's like, I was disappointed in the way the Crying Cave ended. And Brother's like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "You know, I wanted a spooky monster at the end." She leans over the bed, and she makes a horrific face at Brother. And I wish I could show you this picture. Sister's leaning over the bed. Her eyes are huge. She's grinning this wicked grin, sticking her claws in her ears. And Brother gets wigged out. He's like, "Stop it!" And Sister's like, "Ha ha ha, you know, like, that was my scary face." She goes to sleep. And then Brother's awake because there's owl hoots, and he resolves to stop reading as many scary books as he had been reading. So that's the story. That's the Berenstain Bears in the Dark. And as I've already covered, it's a great book about books. It's a great book about, you know, finding books you like. There's a lot of great themes in this book, actually, and I want to cover a few of them. Let's see. So Sister's afraid of the dark because of what she's read. And I've been in this situation many times. You start reading a book, and I haven't been terrified by a book in a long time. But I do remember being a kid, by kid I mean like a young teen, and being in my bedroom, lamp on, lights off, reading a book. I remember reading Stephen King's Gerald's Game, which isn't exactly a kid's book, but, you know, when you're a kid, you read whatever the heck you want. And in Gerald's game, I don't want to give away any of the story or go into the gory details because this is you know, Berenstain Bears podcast. But in Gerald's game, a person is trapped in a room and at one point, and there may or may not be a killer on the loose. And the person is in a bed and they can't see in the room very well because the room itself is pretty dark. And there's a shadow in the corner, like where the two walls meet. It casts a shadow, and so it's very difficult to see. And the character is trying to see into the corners, peering into the darkness, thinking there might be someone hiding in that dark corner. And I remember reading this book when I was a kid and being in my room and reading that passage and just freezing, like literally feeling a chill go down my spine. Like, it's giving me a chill right now just remembering the chill that I felt when I was a kid. It was visceral and scary. And I closed the book. I put it down because I was so scared. And then I had to pick it back up because I needed to know if that killer was in that room. I won't give anything away by saying if the killer was or was not in the room. But it was one of my more vivid encounters with a scary book leading to me being scared, like physically frightened while I was reading it. And I've read many books since then that have, you know, sort of kept me tossing and turning at night a little bit, but nothing like that big reaction that I had. The other one was another Stephen King story. It was, what's the short story about? Oh, it's Jerusalem's Lot. And in Jerusalem's Lot, a guy moves into a house where there might be rats in the walls, but there's probably ghosts. And at one point, the guy goes exploring and he opens a door and there's two ghosts. Dead, like ghosts of the dead in this room, like unexpectedly. He opens the door and it's not a movie, it's a book. Like, you're reading it at your own pace. I remember physically jumping when I read it, like, it was that jarring. And I don't usually have visceral reactions to what I read, but that's another thing that reading a spooky story can do. So Sister reads this story and she becomes afraid of the dark and she starts seeing things in it. And that relates back to the Lovecraft quote that I read at the beginning of the episode, which is, fear of the dark is a natural byproduct of our ability to imagine things. So kids will always be afraid of the dark because they've got these uncontrollable imaginations. Like, they don't have the ability to put a hold on their imaginations. They take everything that they see and they just let it run wild. So Lovecraft says that because uncertainty and danger are always going to be allied in our minds, like, just because of the creatures we are. Like, anytime we're uncertain, a sense of danger is going to creep in there. Any kind of the unknown is going to naturally become a world of peril and, he says, evil possibilities. So we are, as human beings, as intelligent creatures, we understand that not being certain of something allows the possibility, a large possibility, of something dangerous to come into our lives. So, since the dark is an unknown, we naturally associate that with danger because it's a survival instinct. So, when you take the sense of fear and add to that a sense of wonder, and I love that. I love that it's, you're afraid of something, but also you're a person who loves to wonder and you love the possibility of the unknown. You're putting together something that, as long as we are humans, is going to exist, which is a fear of the dark. He says kids are always going to be afraid of the dark. He says that, and it's gonna lend to us a fascination with the unknown. So that leads us right into Papa's discussion of the imagination, because Papa says, you know, this fear you have is built on the sense that you are young and you're full of wonder and you love to create, and that leads to you imagining scary things. And Sister says, well, then take this ability, take this power away from me. I don't want it anymore. I don't want to be burdened with this ability to create monsters where there are no monsters, to create wraiths where there are no wraiths, to create danger where there is no danger. And Father says, no, you need that. Because the very thing that makes you afraid of this world, the very thing that allows you to imagine horrors, the very thing that colors the unknown with and fills in those empty places in our lives with terror and nightmares, can also fill in those empty places with beauty, with creation, with invention. It is the thing that creates your tears at night will create your joys in the morning. The things that makes you cry out in fear in the dark are things that are going to make you cry out in wonder in the daylight. And it is a hard bargain. It is a deal you have to make with your own life, which is, I will allow myself to feel fear in the darkness so that when I am finally presented with the light to create, I can take that same fuel and use it to fill the daylight with wonders. I love that Papa Bear is the one who paints this picture for Sister. And then he demonstrates it physically by taking her up into the attic. He could have brought the nightlight downstairs and said, hey, here's the nightlight I use, because I used to be afraid of the dark. But he saw the necessity of painting a visual picture. And it works. She sees scary things in the attic. Papa knows the attic is full of scary things. Also, they have electric lights in this house. I bet there's an electric light in that attic. But he brings up a lantern to cast shadows. And by allowing Sister to see that her mind creates terrifying shadows, terrifying creatures out of these shadows, she sees that her mind is a powerful thing, is an amazing tool that she can use to create. And then he presents her own lantern in the darkness. This cute lamp, it is a tiny little treehouse, kind of a stump made into a treehouse, got a door and windows, lights up from within. And then when Sister asks Brother to finish the story, I'm gonna share another anecdote. When my older child was very young, they were being taken care of by their grandparents, and we're watching a show on, you know, Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network or something, and it was, I don't know what the show was. I think it may have been Courage the Cowardly Dog. One of those shows that sometimes showed kind of scary imagery. You know, funny, scary, but still scary, especially for a little kid. And something happened. I wasn't there. I don't know. But a scary image came on, and my child was scared. And the grandparents swooped in and turned off the TV. As you do. It's like, oh, something too scary for a child. Let me just turn it off. And what happened, though, was that my kid obsessed over this show for a week, maybe, and was scared at night from this show. And it occurred to me that this was a cartoon show for children and probably had a nice resolution. And even though the image probably would have stuck, it may not have been as impactful if my child had been allowed to learn the ending. How did this resolve itself? How did this play out? Yes, I'm scared in the moment, but if I get the resolution, then it won't seem as scary because the story would have been complete. As it is, the last image I'm left with in my mind is this scary whatever, this face or this monster, whatever it was. That doesn't always play out, but knowing my child and knowing Sister Bear, I see that as being a big part of this story. Sister Bear needed to know how the story ended. It wasn't enough for her to know that there was a spooky cave with a woo-hoo-hoo coming out of it. She needed a resolution to this story in order to overcome her fear. And let's talk about overcoming fear. Little kids like to play scary things. They really do. They like to be monsters. They like to be vampires. They like to be... They hear about something scary in the news, and they want to play it. They want to be a killer. They want to be a robber. They want to bang, bang, bang with their guns. And we as parents want to swoop in and say, don't do that. That's not good play. That's not fun. But there is enough supporting evidence to say that when children play violence, when they play killers, when they play monsters, when they play death, they're doing it in order to take control of their fear, to take control of the unknown. Where's the only place children have any control? It's in their games. It's in their imaginations. And when we swoop in and say, don't play that, that's not good. Assuming that no one's actually getting hurt. You know, if your kid's hitting someone saying, like, I'm a monster, and they're actually hitting somebody, or someone's not, or if someone's really not digging the game, then yeah, as a parent, you can swoop in and say, like, you know, like, so-and-so's not enjoying this, or, hey, you're actually getting violent now. But when you swoop in when they're using their imaginations and playing a game that everyone's on board with, what you may be saying to the child is, hey, your imagination's actually bad. Your imagination's actually dangerous. Because to kids know that they're playing. They know that they're playing pretend. They're not stupid. Like, they understand that I'm making believe here. We're going to walk away after this in 5 minutes and go play something else. What kids are doing is they're saying, I have power over this. I don't have power over it in real life, But I'm creating power over it. It's why kids talk about death after they go to a funeral or hear about something dying. And they talk and they talk and they talk about it. They want to understand it. They want to control it. They want to have some part of it that becomes a part of them. And that says, I don't need to worry about this. So when they play a monster, they're controlling that monster. When they play a killer, they're controlling that killer. And when they want to see the end of the scary movie, when they want to read the end of the scary story, even if it's a week later and they've had time to process the scary part, a lot of times parents will say, well, let's not go back to that book because I saw the way the middle of it freaked you out and I don't want to go through that again. I don't think you need to go through that again. You just think you want to read it again. Let them finish it. Like, seriously, let them finish it. Because they're trying to take control of that story. Because kids know stories. Kids understand stories. They get that a story is a powerful thing. And to leave a story unfinished is taboo. It's, you know, unless it's too much, it's taboo. And here's a funny thing for those with little kids. Sometimes little kids will say, stop reading the story, it's too scary. Or stop reading the story, I don't want to hear anymore. You're like, all right, you put it away. Sometimes they'll come back 3 or 4 months later and be like, let's read that story. And you'll think, oh, you were scared of that story. It might be time to read that story. It might be time to find out how it ends. Or your kid might be freaked out and not want to read it by a story that you have finished. And then a day or two later be like, read that story again. And you're like, no, you were too scared of that story. Maybe you should read that story again. Because maybe what your child is trying to do is own that fear or own that story. Take control of that story. Be bigger than that story. By saying when that story starts and stops, the child's in control. And Sister Bear does this. She says to Brother, finish that scary story. And he's like, are you really? And she's like, yep. And then we get the wonderful ending, which is, so what'd you think of that story? That was disappointing. Because Sister wanted it to be scarier. She had built it up in her mind. And it was just a logical answer. It was a science lesson at the end. Hey, when wind blows across an opening, it makes a sound that's just like your vocal cords do. It's just air passing over it, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, oh. You know, there was a lot of build up. And then there's kind of a letdown and an ending. You know, for those of you who are big fans of Stephen King, again, you kind of get that, you know, the build up to the disappointing ending, which is, you know, I don't want to say it's all of his books, but it's enough of his books. And then we get the role reversal at the end, where now Brother's afraid because Sister made a scary face at him. And being older, I think Brother's had a little more time to let the fear settle in. And he was a little too amused by Sister's fear at the beginning, but now he's had time to think of it. Now, Sister's probably not going to be afraid anymore because she's little, and things like that roll off a kid's back. But for Brother Bear, he's had time to dwell, and he's going to dwell. And I find that amusing, too, because the older you get, the slower the burn. And sometimes it'll be a week later, and that thing you saw a week ago suddenly pops up when you're trying to fall asleep. The longest I've ever gone without having a good night's sleep after experiencing something frightening was the early 2000s remake of the Japanese film Ringu called The Ring. I saw it in the theaters, physically jumped several times, actually yelled out, huh, at one point. Couldn't sleep for 2 weeks. There was some imagery in that movie that I just couldn't get out of my head. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw images from that movie. Still one of my favorite movies. I've still only rewatched it a couple of times, partly because I don't want to lose that. Like, that was a physical reaction. Not bad for a PG-13 movie either. You know, it doesn't show you much. You don't see much. It isn't a gory film. The scary things were more in the way they were shot than in the action. Because I've seen pictures of what scare me online. If you ever want to see them, it's The Ring Face. And, you know, on Google image search. But it's not just the image. It's the way it's presented. It's very unexpected. And that stuck with me. 2 weeks. 2 weeks of bad sleep because of that movie. And jittery, being jittery during the day. I loved it. I really love that movie. It was effective. Effective little flick. Little flicker film. So, where was I? Fear. So, a book about fear. It takes you through the ups and downs of a child encountering their first scary story. Really, scary stories aren't for everyone. I know plenty of people who are like, you like scary movies? You like scary books? Why subject yourself to that? I don't know. Many, many words have been written about the subject. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I like those chills. I like exploring that dark place without ever having to actually explore that dark place. You know, I'm afraid of what's out there in the dark. I'd rather have somebody write about it, and sometimes write about it myself. It's fun to me to explore the unknown and the creepiness of the world. And again, we're talking horror, but there are so many. Someone online just got to ask the question: Is So and Such Movie actually a horror movie? And people are like, nah. And some people are like, yeah, it is. And I say, yeah, if it scares you that much, it's probably a horror movie. The Omen's a horror movie. You know, just because it's got the devil in it, though, doesn't mean it's got to be a horror movie. But The Omen's a horror movie because a lot of people find it scary. So, yeah, sure, it's a horror movie. Is Alien a horror movie? Some people would say, no, it's a science fiction movie. I say, no, it's a haunted house movie. It's a scary movie. It's a slasher movie. It's scary. But is a slasher movie a horror movie? Or is it just a slasher movie? Well, some of them are scary, but some of them aren't scary at all, but they're entertaining. I think Scream sets it up best by saying scary movie instead of horror movie. Horror movie is a loaded term. It has a certain expectation behind it. Let's just say scary movie, because then you can include suspense thrillers. You can include frightening westerns. You can include horror romance and say, let's forget about whether or not it's horror. Is it scary? Because not all horror is scary, and not all scary is in the horror section. I don't know. I think it's a bigger phrase. I think we get hemmed in too much by titles. Is The Berenstain Bears in the Dark a horror book? No, but it's about horror. It's about fear. It's about being scared. And that's why I wanted to cover it on Halloween, because Halloween is a time when many people, not every people, but many people like to explore being scared. And then November 1st hits and you're like, time to start thinking about Thanksgiving. But for the week and a half, 2 weeks to, you know, maybe months leading up to it, you start watching scary movies, start reading scary stories again, and then it's done. And I don't know, it's a nice reminder. I covered this a little bit in one of our Christmas books, but in many parts of the world, the leaves are changing color. We're approaching winter, and it's that nice little spook-em-up as the days get shorter. And you like to remind yourself, winter's coming, the days are going to get dark. And by telling these stories and exploring the fear inside yourself, you are that child again. You are taking control of that fear again, that terror again. You are saying, I own these stories. I can pick up this book and put it down when I want. I can skip this part of the movie if I want. It doesn't control me. It is not bigger than me, because the darkness will be here soon. And we will light candles to stave it off. But eventually those wicks burn down and we're left in our beds with our covers pulled up to our chins. The only light, a little night light maybe, on the table next to our bed. And like Sister Bear, like Brother Bear, like Papa and Mama Bear, we are essentially still creatures in a cave, surrounded hopefully by people who love us. But at the end of the day, when the lights go off, we're all in the dark. Join me next week for another exciting episode of Deep in Bear Country. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez. If you like what you hear, rate and review us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook. Have a wonderful Halloween.